Now, tonight on the subject, the person who goes to pieces. Father, bless the message tonight and bless your simple messenger and yet sincere messenger as he delivers what he believes he's supposed to say tonight. Please help. Amen. May I paraphrase that well-known passage of Scripture? Where there is no vision, the people perish. Paraphrased, I put it this way. Where there is no visible goal, the people go to pieces. Where there is no visible goal, the people go to pieces. Solomon full well knew what he was talking about, for he it was who wrote this and said this. He full well knew it. For Solomon had a vision, had a visible goal in life. Now that goal had been reached. He settled in his luxury and in his ease and went to pieces. There's nothing in the Bible quite as sad to me as this story. Solomon sits in his home. In his sight are his dishes and glasses made of solid gold. His Arabian horses are braying in the distance. The books he has authored are stacked behind him. He looks through the window and sees pools and gardens made for his enjoyment and his luxury and pleasure. Beautiful women, the most beautiful women of the nation, offer him his every wish. He sits in a house that took him 13 years to build. His memory flashes upon the screen of conscience. He has all he ever dreamed of having, yet he's gone to pieces. Hear him as he says, "All is vanity, vanity of vanities. All is vanity and vexation of spirit." He points to each one and he says, "That's vanity." He points to his horses prancing in the distance and he says, "That's vanity." He points to his house, so elaborate, it took them 13 years, the finest craftsman in the kingdom to build his house, with all the luxury and all the conveniences known to his day. And yet Solomon points to that and says, "All that is vanity." He looks out the window and sees his pools for swimming and for enjoyment, for scenery, for fishing. And he sees his gardens, the most manicured gardens in the entire kingdom. And Solomon says, "That too is vanity." He looks at the books that he's written behind him, apart from those that God inspired him to write. And Solomon said, "That too is vanity." He looks at his harem, composed of 700 wives and 300 concubines. And he says, "The sensuous lust of the flesh, that too is vanity." Then the old man strokes his white hair, whitened with the toil of the years, pulls his beard, no doubt, or strokes his beard, and gives his final advice. I wonder what it'll be. Here's a man who has had everything that we normally associate with happiness and pleasure. Everything that you think could make you happy, Solomon had. You name it. Anything you can think of, you'd like to have. Good transportation. Nice home. Lovely furniture. New dishes. New silver. New china. New tapestry. New curtains. New carpet. Horses. A farm. Land. Pleasure. Name it. Everything that you think you'd like to have, that you think could make you happy. I want to make a little statement again. I make it often. I do not know if I've ever heard anybody make this statement before, but I believe it. Everything that has ever made anybody happy since the Garden of Eden. He is available to everybody on the face of the earth today. Why you say, preacher, there are people that live on mission fields in little shacks of houses, but there never was a house that made anybody happy. But you say, preacher, there are people that are living in destitute circumstances with not enough food to eat. Never has been a menu that made anybody happy. I'm saying everything that has ever made anybody happy since Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden is available to you tonight. It's time you young ladies, your wives of Hiles Anderson College students, listen to that. It's time you listen to that. It's time some of you young preacher boys listen to that. It's time you heard it. Everything in the world that's ever made anybody happy is available to every bus kid, every shut-in, every blind person, every deaf person, every poverty-stricken person, every ghetto dweller in this room. Everything that has ever made anybody happy is available to you tonight. Solomon has it all, but Solomon had lost sight of his goal. He had lost sight of the real purpose for his existence. He had no cause in his life. He had lost sight of that thing for which he got up in the morning, and that thing that completely possessed him. He had lost sight of it. And when he lost sight of it, he said, folks, I'm testifying now, when there's no vision, the people go to pieces. And Solomon said, I've gone to pieces. I'm a mental wreck. I'm a nervous wreck. I'm a physical wreck. And brother, everybody in this room tonight who testifies the same way, almost everybody who would have that statement to say tonight, it is because you've lost sight of your goal. I've said so often, there ought to be in everybody's life something that's bigger than he is. Something that lifts you out of yourself. That lifts you above yourself. That makes you forget yourself. That makes you live not for your own comfort, not for your own pleasure, not for your own appetites being satisfied, but for something that is bigger than you are. You see, Solomon's father, David, had made a statement a little bit like this, and Solomon was well versed on this subject. You recall the story. Little David came down one day from tending the sheep to bring to his brothers while they were in the battle against the Philistines. He brought them some corn and some bread and what else? Corn and bread and cheese. And so he came down. His daddy had sent him down there. And he heard this big giant named Goliath breathing out threatenings. And Goliath was challenging the armies of Israel. On this side, what were the armies of Israel? On this side were the armies of the Philistines. And Goliath had said, was saying, okay, choose your captain. Let that captain represent Israel. And I'll fight for the Philistine army, and that captain will fight for the Israel, our armies of Israel. And whoever wins will bring victory to his army. If I, Goliath, win, then Israel will surrender to the Philistines. But if your captain wins, then the Philistines will surrender to Israel. Little David comes up and he hears the threatenings of this big old giant. And little David says to his brother, Eliab, he says, Eliab, I brought you some corn, I brought you some cheese, and I brought you some bread. My daddy sent it. He said, thank you, sonny boy. Now go on back home. It's dangerous here. Little David said, I heard a fellow talking a while ago, and he making a lot of threatenings, and he said he is challenging somebody to represent Israel, and I'd like to do it. And Eliab said, this is a place for men and not for boys. Little David said, ain't none of you men doing nothing about him. And Eliab said, now, sonny boy, you go on home. And David said, somebody ought to shut that big blowhard's mouth up once and for all. And so Eliab said, now listen, David, you go on home now. David said, before you let me go home, I think I'll tell you something. I was tending my sheep back home, and a lion came. And that lion tried to take or kill one of my little lambs. And I took these arms right here, and I killed that lion and that lamb. I killed that lion in protection of my lamb. Eliab said, you did. He said, sure did. But that isn't all. He said, a bear came. And he tried to destroy the flock, and I took these arms, and I likewise killed a bear. Now he said,
If I can kill that lion with that arm, if I can kill that bear with that arm, I can take care of that big, big mouth Philistine as easy as I can take care of a bear. And David said a statement. He said, is there not a cause? Let me tell you something, folks. The most miserable wretch in this room tonight is that person that has nothing that he wants to get up for in the morning. But you say, preacher, that's me. I get up and have nothing to get up for. But it's not circumstantial problems you've got. It's personal problems you've got. And you could get something to get up for in the morning. Don't you tell me. With an area like this, where rest homes dot the horizon like church steeples dot a church roll. Don't you tell me. There are not enough things for which you could live. There are enough folks in Chicago area in the ghettos hungry and starving and without clothing and who need encouragement and help. Nobody in this room needs to live in this great area without having a cause that consumes you. Little David said, is there not a cause? There are a few statements in the Bible that just to read them stir me, and that's one of them. When I see little David saying, is there not a cause? Somebody ought to shut him up. Let me do it. He said, I killed a lion, I killed a bear, and I can dead sure take care of that big, big, big buzzard over there that's blowing off and boasting. So, little David is taken by his brother Eliab to the king, King Saul. Now, Saul is the rascal, should have been out there doing this thing, because Saul, the Bible says, was head and shoulders bigger than anybody else in all of Israel. Little David walks in and says, Your Majesty, I'd like to volunteer for something. And Saul said, what is it, lad, sonny boy? What is it? He said, if you don't mind, I'd like to go out and shut that big rascal up out there, making all the noise. Well, ha, 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 said Saul, that's a very noble, noble desire. But you are a little fanatical. Your youth has made you a little bit overly zealous. And you're one of those college boys. And you're a little overly zealous, and you'll settle down after a while. And David said, okay, if I settle down after a while, he said, before after a while comes and I settle down, I better take care of him now. Because if I get like you, I'll be scared to take care of him. And so Saul said, now look, he said, what credentials have you? Little David said, see that arm right there? Don't let that scare you, folks. That is not here for your danger. That's here for your protection. And so he said, see that arm right there? And Saul said, yes. And David said, I was taking care of my sheep back home. And he said, a lion came. And that lion came, and he endangered the lives of my flock. And he said, I took that lion, these arms right here. And he said, I killed that lion. And no, he said, a bear came. And I took these hands right here, and I killed a bear. Well, said Brother Saul, he said, if you can do that, you got yourself a job. He said, I'm going to be so nice to let you use my armor. Now, wasn't that an act of courage on the part of Saul? I'm going to let you use my armor. Little David gets in Saul's armor. David, in the Hebrew, it says David wore a size 36 coat. And it says that Saul wore a size 58. And so David, little 36, gets inside that 58. I won't say it's too big for him, but he did walk a half a block and the armor didn't move. And David said, I can't use this. I can't use it. And King Saul said, why? And David said, I have not proved this armor. I have not proved your sword. I have not proved your shield. I have not proved your helmet. I have not proved your armor. But he said, I did something I have proved. I proved these hands. Now I got a little slingshot right here too. I done proved that. I know I can use that. Now you let me after that rascal. I'll make him as the lion was and as the bear was because I know what I can do. Listen, David said, is there not a cause? And let me tell you tonight, the most miserable wretch in this room is the person who has to say with Solomon of old, there's no vision. I'm falling to pieces. I'm going to pieces. Listen, why don't you quit making all the trips to all these doctors? I'm sorry, doctors. You need the money. But I'm saying, we got folks here, they go from the MD to the DO to the chiropractor to the naturopath. I can't think of any others, but one after the other. And don't get mad at me, because if you get mad at me, I'll get mad at you. And I get mad at you, you won't enjoy any sermon here again as long as I live. I'm saying that the truth is, the problem with most of you who are falling to pieces is this.
You never lost yourself in anything. You have no cause. You have no goal that's visible. You haven't got your eye on where you're going. You've got your eye on yourself. And Solomon said, I know what I mean. I know. I had my eye on a goal. And I fought toward that goal. I looked toward that goal. And I was held together by that goal. And then Solomon said, I lost that goal, got my eye off the goal. And Solomon said, I've gone to pieces now. How does a little mother work and sacrifice and keep sanity? How does a little mother who's been forsaken by her husband to rear a little baby alone, or maybe the grim reaper of death has removed that husband from her side, and she has a little child, a little baby, and maybe two or three children, and she has to make a living for them, has to leave early in the morning after getting up and getting the kids ready for school, and then breakfast, and then going to work, and then home from work, and then supper or dinner, and then cleaning house, and then washing, and then ironing, and then helping the kids with the homework, and she goes to bed worn out. How does that little mother, how does she make it? I don't know how she makes it. She makes it because when she sees that little boy in that crib, she doesn't see a little boy. She sees an attorney at the court of justice. She sees a doctor with a stethoscope around his neck. She sees a preacher with his Bible open. She sees a man of whom she wants to be proud. And she said, I've given myself my goal, my life. I'm pressing on the upward way. New heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as I onward bound. Lord, plant my feet on higher ground. I've got a goal. I see my boy a success. I see my boy a honest, upright young man. I see him in the business field. I see him a deacon. I see him an usher. I see him a choir member. That's my boy. That's why she doesn't go to pieces while he's still growing up. She goes to pieces after he gets married. Why? She has no goal. And she also has a daughter-in-law. Anybody that's got a daughter-in-law goes to pieces. But you see, she didn't go to pieces while she was approaching the goal. She goes to pieces after she's reached the goal. How does a weary father trudge his way to the steel mill morning after morning or night after night? How does he do it? He has no future as far as he's concerned. How does he do it? Without going to pieces. How does it? He sees not just a child at home. He sees a college campus. He sees an auditorium. He sees a processional. He sees caps. He sees gowns. He sees his own boy or a girl walking down that aisle. He hears his name called or her name called, and he sees that young person walking across that platform getting a degree. Why does he go day after day and hold? How does he hold to pieces? Why? He's got a goal. He does not fall apart. He does not go to pieces. Why? His goal is visible and plain. I'll tell you when he goes to pieces. He goes to pieces when he retires. And I'm not against retirement if you get another goal right away. I'm against the kind of retirement where you don't do anything but push a disc down a shuffleboard or follow a stupid ball across a pasture to put it in a cup. Now, I'm not against it because I don't like it. I'm against it because I know people, and I know as sure as I'm standing behind this pulpit, when there is no visible goal, the people go to pieces. How many wealthy men have you known that have worked for a lifetime or are up to middle age and got enough money to retire, and then they retire and die within 12 months? Why? They've lost their goal. They have no vision. Where there is no visible goal, the people go to pieces. How does a tired pastor keep going in a small town somewhere, in a difficult place, on a tiny salary? I'll tell you how he does it. He sees lives that he's building. He sees young people for whom he has dreams.
He sees children whom he wants to pastor all their lives. He sees young couples who need his counsel and need his advice. He sees people standing at the cemetery by an open grave who need a shoulder on which to drop their tears. He sees couples standing at the altar waiting for someone to pronounce them as husband and wife. He has a visible goal. He doesn't have much money, but money never made anybody happy. Listen, honestly, I'll be honest with you. I wish everybody in this room almost would go broke. I am so sick and tired of people grabbing for money, I don't know what to do. It is the son. Listen, there are good people all over this room who are going money crazy. Not one person in the history. Listen to me. I wish you'd do more than sit there and hear me holler. Not one person in the history of mankind has ever been made happy by any number of accumulation of those. Not one. Not one. Now you listen to me. Happy people are not wealthy people. Happy people are not educated people. Happy people are not necessarily poor people. Happy people are people who don't even know they exist. They're lost. They have a vision. They have a goal. They have a cause. And they're lost in that goal. They're lost in that vision. They're lost in that cause. Solomon said, I once had a goal. I want you folks to notice this amazing accumulation of money that I have inside this little money thing tonight. I've got $35 in here. I've been saving for decades, thank God. How does a teacher live in poverty and is happy? How? Because she looks out and sees that little child. She has a goal. She has a little boy out there that's having a tough time learning how to read. And she says, by the grace of God, I'll teach him how to read. Listen, those little teachers out there at Hammond Baptist Grade School who make about enough money to where they can get food stamps if they chose to, they're 10 million times happier than these placard-carrying hypocrites that strike for more money in the public school so they can get more money for wrecking the morals and decency of our kids. They get more money for teaching our kids that man came from a monkey. They get more money for teaching that open sex and indecency and immorality. Listen, you want to find happy school teachers, you'll find those out there that look at those kids and say, I love these kids. I'd pay to teach these kids. Alexander the Great had a goal. Conquered the known world. He lost his goal. Couldn't even conquer his own lust for alcohol and died before he was 30. Around 30, because he was an alcoholic. Moses had a goal. He saw the promised land. He saw the land that flowed with milk and honey. On Jordan's stormy banks I stand and cast a wistful eye to Canaan's fair and happy land where my possessions lie. And Moses saw the gold. He saw the promised land. And as long as he was marching toward the promised land, marching, 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 no look to the left, no look to the right, marching toward the promised land, Moses was happy. But then Moses decided to stop. He lost sight of his goal. He smote the rock twice. He lost his temper. He numbered the folks for war and lost sight of his goal. And when Moses did that, he got his eyes on himself. And nobody who ever gets his eyes on himself is happy. Nobody. Nobody. I said nobody. Get your mind off yourself. Well, my feelings are hurt. Oh, why don't you become a good Christian? Well, I tell you what, I'm just bitter about something. Why don't you go to the prayer closet and get right with God, and you won't get bitter. Brother, if anybody has a right to get bitter, it's God Almighty against you. You put nails in his hands, crucified his son, put him on a cross, and sinned against him and deserved to go to hell. In God's dear name, get your mind off yourself. Abraham had a goal.
He looked for a city which had foundations, whose builder and ruler was God. Abraham lost sight of his goal. He went to Egypt, picked up a little Egyptian slave girl, hired her, brought her back to Canaan. By the way, you young folks could do a lot worse than that than listen to what I'm saying. You dead sure could find a lot worse things to do than to hear every word the preacher's talking about tonight. And everybody in this house, I don't care if you're 15 or 50 or 16 or 60 or 17 or 70, someday you're going to stand face to face with your God and give an account for this sermon tonight. You better do some cramming. You better do some thinking. Abraham lost sight of his goal, ruined his race, ruined the nation, broke his home, severed with his nephew, had an illegitimate child, or fathered an illegitimate child who gave birth to the Arabs. Why? Lost sight of his goal. And Samson had sight of his goal. He was the strongest man, the mightiest man in the whole world, of whom it was said more than about any other person in the Bible, the Spirit of the Lord God came upon him. And Samson lost his goal, lost sight of his goal. Samson put his head in the lap of the wicked Delilah, lost everything that was decent and right. And Saul had his eye on his goal. He was the most humble man in the whole nation. He was the fairest of all the men in the nation and the greatest man in the kingdom. He lost sight of his goal. Went to pieces. Had nervous trouble. When Noah, this is interesting to me. For 120 years, Noah had a goal. What? Preach righteousness and build an ark. When his goal was accomplished, now listen to me. When his goal was accomplished, he had no more ark to build. He had no more people to whom he could preach. And Noah said, "Phew, finally, I can enjoy life." He did. Got drunk. His son committed what I think was a sin of homosexuality with him. And he went to pieces. I want to make a statement. Do you know who the great men in history are? Follow me carefully. The men who always were in a crisis. Now, probably I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. Please don't misunderstand this. One of the dearest friends I ever had on the face of this earth was Lester Roloff. But if Lester Roloff had won his battle finally and for all about the children in his homes, he probably would not have been happy. He's marching toward a goal. Somebody said one time to me, and he's alive, said, "Brother Roloff, is Brother Roloff still in his battle?" I said, "Yes." "How do you know? Have you talked to him?" "No, but he's always in a battle." Why? He died that way. You let him do exactly what he did. Win his battle, rest on his laurels, retire for 5 years. You couldn't get 200 folks to his funeral. 8,000 people came to his funeral when I preached it. Why? Why did 8,000 folks come? Because he died with his eye on his goal. Couple has a sick child, and they join their prayers together for that child. Maybe it's leukemia. Maybe it's pneumonia. Maybe it's a crippled foot or a crippled hand. Maybe it's an affliction. But they join to go for our child to be as normal as possible and as well as possible. And that couple marches toward the goal. What happens? That child dies or is healed. And they finally have reached the goal. And usually they have trouble within a year. Why? Where there is no visible goal, the people go to pieces. A man goes to law school. Think about Vaughn Glover. Boy, I admire that guy. All those years, went to law school at night, had a family to care for, year after year and year after year. Finally, recently, to God be the glory, he passed his bar examination, and now has a law practice. Middle-aged man, but still, he had a goal. Now, I wonder how many times, Brother Glover, I wonder how many times a man and a wife have sacrificed to get through law school, or medical school, or seminary, and they're done without. But there's a goal, and they keep marching, and they're happy. I'll guarantee you, most of the lawyers in America would tell you the happiest days of their life was when they were training for their degree. And most of the doctors in America, if they're honest, would tell you the happiest days of their life was their training for their degree. Why? There was a goal, and they marched toward the goal, and they marched toward the goal, and they got there. The church is attacked. Maybe by an arsonist. Maybe by the government. Maybe by the denomination. Maybe by the press. But a church is attacked. And that church closes ranks. And they say, we'll fight to the death. And fight they do. And they're together. And they rally around the preacher. They have a goal. Then that victory is won, and the battle is over. And I could stand here tonight and call the names of 100 churches right now who have died because they got to fighting with themselves, they got to fussing within, they had won the battle that pulled a nation has its hostages held. And that nation closes ranks. One of the best things that happened to the United States of America in the last 10 years was our hostages being held with the enemy. We got together on something. We got together. Even the Pinkos and the Redos and the Weirdos and the Sexos and the Gayos and Pervertos got together. Those are our people. They're our hostages. And we had a goal. The church builds a building. And they say we'll build it. I'll guarantee you, the utopia that they thought would come in that new building usually is a tribulation instead of a millennium. All across America, preachers say, boy, if we could just get this new building, we don't have enough room. Churches are happier when they don't have enough room. Churches are happy when they got to squeeze in. And there's an excitement and a zeal and a thrill. Why? They're marching toward a goal. Churches fall to pieces when they reach the utopia. New auditoriums become mausoleums instead of sanctuaries. A couple rears a family. And they sacrifice. Mother does without and daddy does without. They've got to get those children to school. Mama gets a job so she can help pay the tuition. Or dad moonlights. I want to tell you something. Back to some of you college wives. It's pitiful that you're going to look back one of these days to the years you're going through right now as being the happiest of your life, and yet you're griping all the way through them. The family grows up. The last one gets married. Goal's gone now. Mom and dad can go home and fight. Look at the stumbling sot on Skid Row tonight. Watch him as he finds with his trembling palsied hands a little bottle has about that much in the bottom. And he takes it and finds another bottle.
that has about that much and adds it to the first bottle and finds another and finds another to get enough to satisfy his craving for alcohol. Who is that man? Who is he?
It's either some fella that lost his goal or never had a goal. Probably he's some guy who didn't have to work when he was a boy, who didn't have a goal. Went to the hippie concerts, and brother, there's not a thing in America as rotten as this Michael Jackson craze. And I want to make it very plain. Any teenager in this house tonight who has 1 ounce of admiration for Michael Jackson is not right with your God. No, you're not. No, you're not. One of the filthiest, vilest things in this world. Get right with God. When you say teenager, we'll be teenagers. Christian teenagers can be Christian teenagers. Who are these people in Skid Row? Who are these folks in these rock concerts? Who are they? I'll tell you who they are. They're young people whose mom and dad worked and worked and worked and were happy. And then they did the foolish thing of saying, we don't want our children to have to work like we did. And that is the most foolish thing you ever did in your life. What you're saying is, we want our children to be footloose and fancy free. Give them all the money they can have. Give them a car, let them drive around town and live it up. And the kids have no responsibility. They have no obligation. They have no goal. They have no vision. And they're falling to pieces all over this nation tonight. While I'm at it, I want to thank God for Fox something. Massachusetts. Foxworth. Yeah. Who said, they're not coming to our town. He's not coming to our town. If you want to see the degradation of our nation, You tell me who your hero is, I'll tell you what you are. Look at the middle-aged man squandering his money he inherited from his dad. His dad had a goal. His dad worked hard. He had a dream that his son would someday come in his business. His son did come in. His dad retired. And his son took what was his, took over the business. But he never had a goal, never had a dream, never had to tough it. Gets 50 years old, wants to retire. He and his wife go down to Florida, Sun City Center. He can sit on the front porch and watch the sun come up and watch your varicose veins get bigger. Pushing around this. A man who's headed a corporation will never be happy pushing a disc down a board. Never will be. Lost his vision. You say, preacher, what can you do then? Let me give you 4 things quickly. One is have more than one goal. So when one's taken away, you got nothing left. Have more than one vision. 2, plan another one when one is nearing completion. You know what Jack Hiles did? You won't believe this, but I'm a sentimental old softy. When Becky, David, Linda, and Cindy got married, I could have fallen to pieces. But brother, I just didn't feel like it's falling to pieces time. When I saw the day approaching when they each were going to commit marriage, I planned a big project. You don't know this, but you built many a building around here just because of my kids getting married. Some of you folks owe $10,000 now, making monthly payments, have been for 5 years. Well, one of our kids is getting married. You folks that go to Hiles Anderson College can thank Becky and David, Linda and Cindy. All that was to get my mind off them leaving home. By the way, every once in a while, some young married person will come to me and say, you know, my mom and dad
they don't act right toward me anymore. They're pulling away from me. And I always say, honey, you're the one that left. You're the one that took off. Cindy, don't you gripe at me. You're the one that left. You traded handsome, good-looking, intelligent, well-built, muscle-bound dad for a wreck. Forgive me, folks, but I just don't think I'm ready to fall to pieces yet. So, you'd be shocked if you knew all the goals I got, because you got to finance them. I wouldn't tell you what they are. You deacons are the same. I got more dreams. You know, that scripture over in Joel chapter 2, verse 28 and 29, where it says, the old men shall dream dreams and the young men shall see visions. I told God one day, you got that mixed up. It's the young men that dream dreams. And the old men see the visions. Old men get senile, see green people following them. I mean, it's a young whippersnapper got the dream. But I'm old now, brother, and God was right. I got more dreams right now than I had in this 25. You know why? I'm not going to fall to pieces. If you want to, go ahead. You've heard me say more times than one, brother. As long as his old soul voice will squeak, it's going to squeak. As long as these hands can move, they're going to wave. As long as these feet can move my body, they're going to move it. Why? I'm not going to fall to pieces. I'm going to keep my eyes on the goals. I say this also, three. Have some goals Have some goals. This is very important. Have some goals that are striving goals and not reaching goals. Have some goals for the striving. Now, for example, I'm losing weight. It's falling down. If it keeps on, it'll go out my toes in about 10 years. I'm losing weight. I was gaining 5 pounds a month. Now I've been losing weight 3 months. I've got it down. I'm only gaining 3 pounds a month now. I'm going to get down to 165. You say when? In a millennium? I'm going to do it. You know what? I get me a Reese's peanut butter cup in one hand and a tab in the other. Huh? Yeah, that's preaching, ain't it? And so do you. You go to McDonald's, Big Mac, quarter pounder with cheese, Chicken McNuggets, big French fries, and a Diet Coke. And you know, I've been on a diet for 40 years. And I'm still working at it. You know, The joy of life doesn't come by reaching. The joy of life comes by striving. And if, I said this many times, I thank God tonight that I was not a brain in school. I mean, to me, I made the honor roll, but brother, I had to work. And if I hadn't had a smart girl right in front of me, I'd never have made it. I mean, she prayed for me. But I worked. Look, I mean it now. I had to work to get an A or a B. And a C took some work for me, too. I never was one of these folks where it came easy. I'll tell you what. I've met a few of these people. Or who it came easy, went to school with me. I met them.
And they didn't learn something I learned in school. I learned to tough it. I learned to scrape. I learned to work. I learned to strive. And brother, that striving was more important than that. You know, for me, Chaucer was the most ridiculous person in school to learn. And Beelzebub put Chaucer in the literature books. Can you imagine anybody having learned Van Darapili with his shore sote? The drought of March is perished to the rothi and bothered every vein and feats liqueur. First time my English teacher quoted that mess, that beautiful stuff, I said, bless God, she's got it. She's talking in tongues. She's got the baptism. I never could figure out what algebra is for. Still can't figure it out. Look, I'm superintendent of school. My name's on the top. And I'll be honest with you, kids, I still don't know what algebra is for. I don't know. I spent 16 years trying to find X. I've got it filed in my office right now and don't know what to do with it. Stupidest, most idiotic, foolish thing in the world. But we're going to have it next year. You know why we're going to have it? Because, bless God, you hunt for it, and the hunting for it is the value of it all. I took algebra in junior high, in high school, and college. I took calculus, trigonometry, all that stuff. I spent one whole year on a tangent. Trying to find its fellow tangent. But you sit without, what's that for? The striving, the diligence. Those little girls out there at Howells Anderson College tonight, waiting on tables. Table waiting is the most important subject you're taking. Striving for a goal. Where there is no open goal, the people fall to pieces. Last thing. Only strive for goals who give birth to new goals. Only strive for goals that give birth to new goals. Don't strive for a goal that's its end. Strive for an end that can be converted into a means immediately. All of this house tonight, there are people. They're unhappy, maladjusted, fall into pieces. It is the silliest thing I ever heard of in my life. There's no need for it. There are too many things to do in life. Too many goals. Solomon said as he stroked his beard, whitened the rising of too many suns, the falling of too many drops of snow, and the chill of too many winters. His hair is white. His brow is furrowed. His face is wrinkled. His hands are palsied. In fact, he quotes all that in Ecclesiastes. His feet walk an unsure step. He can still hear the enchantment of his beautiful women and hear the prancing of his Arabian horses on the pavement outside. He can hear the birds brought in from the tropics to sing melodies. He can see the fish jumping in the pools and see the reflection of the sky in the pools. He can look and see the finest of everything Tapestry brought in from the best places in the world. Carpet shipped in. Stone shipped in. Jewelry shipped in. He sees the tremendous gifts the Queen of Sheba brought him. He has everything. Daddy, tell me. If anybody knows the secret of life, you do. Tell me, Daddy. All the things you've got, what makes you happy? His eyes moisten. His lips quiver. And he says, son, my advice to you is simple. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. While the evil days draw nigh, and thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And son, this is the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Son, I had a vision. I was happy. I built the temple that your granddaddy started. He left me the materials and the foundation. He told me to build the house of God. And son, I did it just like my granddaddy got it from God. I built it. And as long as I was overseeing the construction, I was happy, son. I had a goal that was visible. I could see it. But son, when the temple was finished, I decided it worked hard enough and long enough. I decided just to take it easy the rest of my life. But son, I've gone to pieces. See these trembling hands. See this furrowed brow. See this natural frown on my old face. I've gone to pieces, son. Why, Dad? Why? I lost my vision. I lost my visible goal. I lost the thing for which I got up in the morning. I lost it. And because I've lost it, I've gone to pieces. Father, bless the message tonight. I wish 1,000 folks would get the idea. Oh, to get the vision again of the goal. To get the glimpse of the destiny. Dear God, apply the sermon to all the people as each has need. Please.